Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address. Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening.
All right, hello and welcome to Scalping with Hefe. I'm not Jeff, neither is Flary, so that leaves two of your flippers tonight's star. Jeff, I listened to your episode on Crudelli's podcast the other day, and I thought you did a fantastic job, man. I really enjoyed specifically your conversation about the algos, and I realized that I still don't have that great of an understanding of what they are, why they're here. So I figure we dedicate a chunk of time here to get a better understanding of all that stuff. So I've got Flary here with us because he's my shark as our professional trader. If he hears anything that catches his interest, he's going to jump in with questions. Flary, I don't care how long it goes, actually. So if I have to split this into two episodes, I will. All right, Jeff, do you want to start us off with maybe just like a refresher of what the K-algo is?
Well, sure. I mean, it varies by market. You know, the easiest allocation to describe to anyone is just the A allocation. What the A allocation is, that's what's in the Fed fund market. So what the A allocation is there's no percentage. Let's just assume it's never somebody's market. So an A allocation is if there's 1,000 on the bid and 10,000 on the offer, everyone's equal. So whoever's the biggest order, if there's 1,000 lot on the 10,000 offer, he's 10% of the offer. Let's just assume he's the biggest part of the offer. Now that you have a couple 800 lots, they're 8%. 600 lots are 6%. Now, if 100 lot trades into that 10,000, it gets divided very evenly.
Okay.
You know, so 10% is going to get 10. Those guys are going to get 8. The 6, you know, the 600 lots are going to get 6. And along the line.
So this one's all based on the size of your resting order.
Right. So that's just a straight allocation order. And we're assuming that it's not somebody's market, you know, because there's multiple layers. Once it's somebody's market, it's their market.
What do you mean by somebody's market?
Yeah.
Like, so, what's an example of that?
Okay. If there's 10,000 on the offer and I need to buy 20,000. I'm going to lift 10,000 out with a 20,000 lot. Now it's 10,000 on the bid. Mm-hmm. Now the bid grows up to 100,000. Hey, the first 10,000 contracts are mine. I turn the market. It's my market. Now, there are different rules with that. If I bought, say it was even at 01 and there was that 10,000 at 01, and I say, hey, I'm one bid for 20,000. So let's just say I get the 10,000 on the offer, and now it's one bid 10,000. Doesn't matter how big it grows, it's my market right here. However, if there's only 3,000 offered at 2 and people take it 2 bid and now it goes back to 2 offer, it's not my market anymore. Now it's allocation. Mm-hmm. So if there's 100,000 there and somebody were to sell 10,000 into it, I'm only getting 10%. Hmm. Yeah, they're different leveling here. I will get more than 10%. The bottom line is I'm basically only going to get like 15, 20% of the that order because it went two bid. Therefore, it's not my market anymore.
So what you mean by somebody's market is just whoever's.
Yes. If I turn the market.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, it's, if there's deep pockets, it's first on the bid, then nobody correct. Else is getting anything else.
Right. Okay. So that's when I say it's never anybody's market, when I describe any, the A algo or the K algo. And, you know, each allocation has different rules. Each algo has different rules per market. Mm-hmm. And I can't even get into the one that used to run the Euro dollars. That was a separate algo. I haven't looked at the SOFR to know what algo they run because I don't trade the SOFR. However, I'm sure their allocation's different than the K or the A from the, you know, the CBOT.
Okay.
So the K algo, in a nutshell, I'll describe it from the 2-year perspective. It's a 40-60 algo. Actually, this goes for the grains too. It's 40% FIFO, 60% allocation. So once again, assuming it's nobody's market and there's 2,000 on the bid and 2,000 on the offer. Let's just keep it simple. And let's just say I'm 1,000 of it. Let's keep math simple. And somebody sells 50 into it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I get 60% of the float.
And that's just for the allocation portion.
That's just for the allocation. Forget the 40%, which right. is FIFO. If I'm not the FIFO portion of it, if I'm the tail end of that, I'm probably going to get more than the front of the line, because mm-hmm. the front of the line guy probably isn't as big as my order. If I was, say, 50% of that, I'm going to get the lion's share of that algo. So if somebody were to sell 50 into it and I get, and I'm 50%, so that means there's 30 contracts, I'm getting 15 contracts based on that.
I mean, already my brain's turning. So like there's got to be games that can be played there where like you really only want 100 lots filled, but you know you can kind of game the algo to get X percentage based on looking at the MBO. Like you get filled and then you can you pull that order?
Or absolutely.
Is there rules against pulling the order?
This goes back to our original podcast that I did with you guys when I said the timers. Understanding timers. Well, where do timers really matter? Yeah, they matter in scalping outrights. I mean, if I know somebody's going to buy 10,000 bonds in 50 lot increments for the next hour, we're going to go up. I mean, I'll go with them. However, right. when these timers are going on and I know the exact second, I know the exact millisecond these things are going to be executed. Of course, I'm going to flash in 1 second before, because I can figure by the math, I'm going to look. Let's try to keep it simple. So just say there's 1,000 orders there. Everybody's a 10 lot on that.
Right. Okay.
Not going to happen, but I would go, well, okay. I just need to be one contract bigger than them.
Oh,
so.
Right. Yeah. Cause now you,
and I know the exact second it's coming in.
You win the allocation battle.
I know. So again, there's a lot of math into this, and come on, I gave a simple example. You know, a lot of times, you know, there's 250,000 on the bid. I know they're going to sell 3,000 and you're like, okay, there's 800 orders here. Well, that's where you kind of have to guess. You're like, well, if there are 800 orders here, this is what the average order is. Again, there's going to be some significantly bigger and a lot significantly smaller. There's a lot of games that are played there. So you do need to figure out, and don't kid yourself, HFT firms.
Yeah,
oh my God. They know everybody. They know everybody's exact order.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, they have it up and down. They know every order on that book. Hey, you can do it on TT. I don't want to allocate the screen space for it, nor do I care that much, because I'm trying not to do that anymore. But from time to time, I'll play ball with, you know, these guys when they do. You know, if I see something that I can, I don't know, I guess lack of a better word is stealing money from, I'll take advantage of it.
If there's some uncertainty then of not knowing how big of a position that you're going to get, I'm assuming there's some uncertainty there. Like, how do you manage that when you're in those trades? Like, if you get filled more than you wanted, or you don't get filled as much as you want, or somebody sees a big order and decides that this is the time they're going to try to take it from you.
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of issues with that. And, you know, that's the famous, fuck around and find out.
Yeah.
You know, portion of it. So that's what happened to me that one time in the 5 year, when I got steamrolled on, 10,000, cause I was trying to, play the game, and I was over quoting it, and they hit 500,000 contracts and they stuffed us all with 10,000 to 20,000 lots. Like, I mean, you just got to know what you're doing. I mean, it's kind of, this is probably right up Fleury's alley here, because this is just kind of like the longer you're out there, your odds are increasing. If I'm sitting out there with a 5,000 lot and I'm just sitting there, well, every second I'm out there ticks up, ticks up, ticks up, ticks up. I'm exposing myself to risk when I only need to buy 100. Let's say I only need to buy 100 and I'm quoting 5,000. Every second I'm up there, out there, I'm increasing my odds of getting completely steamrolled on it. That goes back to knowing the timers, the exact second trades are coming in. Because when I do that, I limit my risk. I can be out there for a second, 1 to 2 seconds, get what I want. No, I don't know exactly what I'm going to get. The order size varies sometimes on these timers, especially during the roll. Like, you can think they're doing, typically they do 50 to 100 lots that people are quoting for, but I'll get into how competitive that is later. But so, if I know I'm putting 7 orders out there, I know I'm going to get 7 contracts because the size is so big. I'm just going in there to get 7 contracts. And you're like, okay, 7, that's, $109 that I have the edge on. Well, at some point you have to weigh the risk reward. Well, I'm putting 5,000 out there.
Yeah.
To get 3.5 contracts.
You're picking up quarters in traffic.
It's, but when I would do it back in the 2 year, I wasn't getting 7 contracts. When I knew these timers were 200 and 300 lots. I mean, there was one day, there was a 30-second timer. He was selling 250 lots every 30 seconds. And this is back when the twos were quarter tick bids, and the bid would constantly be like 500, 1,000. It was a two tick. So it was basically a two tick wide market. So I would be like, screw you. I'm going to sell the 500 lot before the 250 is going to come in, because I'm going to quote right below. I know the guy's going to sell 250. I just sold 500. I bought 100. Now it goes back bid. I'm like, but I know he's selling 250. So the next time I'm going to hit them again, and I'll take them sellers again, and I'll buy another 100. And what people weren't adjusting is I'm selling that 500, and then people aren't just sitting out there quoting. So I was picking that up. Like, I was picking all of that extra up. And come on, I was doing this. I can remember this. This was Columbus Day. It's probably back in 2013 or 14. It was a long time ago. But my brother and we each walked away 75 on both days.
I didn't know you traded with your brother.
Yeah, my brother, he's different. We're different, but the same.
Mm-hmm.
He's a better spreader than I am.
He's a 10-year flipper.
Yeah, he's only the 10-year.
No, he's a better spreader than I am. Like, you think I make exotic spreads up. That's nothing compared to him. He'll spread like the funds versus the twos, the funds versus the fives. He don't care. He'll do whatever spread he thinks he can get an edge in.
Mm-hmm.
His favorite spread right now is bonds versus ultras. He's pretty, I'll let him speak for himself.
Okay.
He'll put size on.
Yeah.
Yeah. That will make most people vomit. But I'll put him on. He doesn't care. He's no different than I am. Other than we just trade a little different. He probably knows the K algo almost as well as I do. I mean,
so what caused that to even get implemented then? Was there just too many people doing what you talked about, owning the market?
I think they tried to make it more like the pit.
Yeah. You get some, you get some, you get some.
Exactly. That's how it was done in the pit. If I were a broker in the pit and I got to sell 1,000 contracts, let's just say there's 1,000 bid, I'd be like, hey, you get 100, you get 100, 50, 50, 200, yeah, so you know.
There's like some baked in favoritism there too. Right. Because like if you've got size on, you're going to get a better like allocation, you know, so it makes
and
sense.
So I think that's why the allocation was made. I don't really know why they did it in corn and beans, to be honest. The size really isn't, the size of their markets aren't really that big. I mean, not compared to bonds. Like, I mean, I can't imagine if the bonds, I always wondered if the bonds or the 10-year were allocation, just how crazy they would get, like size-wise. It would be utterly insane. Because I've been noticing the bond closes, they get 2,500 up now.
I mean, is there a piece of this that, you know, potentially the game is to over quote, and that's somehow beneficial to, you know, the depth of the market and the liquidity?
Yeah, people
that's
overquote
the perception
this
of the liquidity, yeah, and, you know, things like that. Like, oh, look at this market, it's so thick. And it's really not because it's being overquoted in order to game the algo, but like everyone wins kind of thing.
Sure. The perfect example is the 2-year back in 2013, 2014, 2015. Open interest in the 2-year, open interest was only 800,000, like 600,000 to 800,000. We would get to the roll. So now you got 600, you got eight, let's call it 800,000 open interest. You would get to the roll, it'd be a million on one side, 800 on the other side. And you're like, open interest is only 800,000, but we've got a million on the bid and a million on the offer. There's 2 million out there people quoting.
Right.
So, and everyone did it in the 2-year because the 2-year was quarter tick. And because of the nominal value of the 2-year is a $200,000 contract. It wasn't a quarter tick like the 5-year where you're making 781.25. You're making 1562.50 a tick, 1563, whatever it is. I still contend that CME probably stole thousands from me, and you know that rounding error. Somehow I always seem to get screwed on it. Like, should round up or round, like, however,
the Superman scam, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, just when you figure it out. But yeah, it would bother me at the end of the day. You're like, well, what? I made 100, you know, you're like, well, wait, I should have a half cent more, you know, per account, you know, per thing. You're like, well, wait a second. It's going to add up.
Yeah,
it does add up, but leaving that out of it, that's where it started. So the 2-year is a quarter tick and everyone's quoting there because they didn't want to go to the bonds because the bonds were quarter ticks and you're only making 781. So you're going to put 1,000 bond spreads on. You're like, yeah, I got 1,000 bond spreads on. Well, you're only making $7,800. You put 1,000 2-year spreads on, you're making $15,000. So people are going to go where the money is. And the money was always in the 2-year. It was just a better. So yeah, going back to the K algo. So the 40-60 is, I think it's very closely because of the pit. Trying to spread it out, trying to spread the wealth amongst multiple traders versus one.
I could see it in like corn and those ones, like the things that the farmers are using. It could be something that's just to make it a little more equitable for them to be able to hedge.
Yeah, everybody, like you can't come to the market and get shut out basically. Right. And you had business to actually do.
And I agree with it. But when you look at the corn, I mean, the corn trades about, I don't know, I've been looking this week. It seems about 125K a day.
No, that's not much.
It's not bad. Not, I mean, but you know, the quoting that I've noticed in the corn, it's starting to change. I'm noticing how big the numbers are getting in corn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to see 3,000 or 4,000 in outrights, you know, at a price on the close, I mean, that's a lot. I mean, I can't believe. But that's everyone waiting, you know, for those closing orders that you just, and there, again, there's your rub. How many am I going to get? You know, if I'm 500 or 3,000, okay. I mean, we know what percentage I am. But how much am I going to get? You know, maybe they're only doing one lots and because of the layering, I'm not getting any, or maybe they're doing five lots and I'm getting two on each clip. you know, it all depends what they're trading into it. So that's always been a very difficult game with the K-Algo to figure out. And with one of the reasons why I pretty much stay away from corn, I've stayed away from corn pretty much my whole career on it, because I don't know what to do with corn. If I get run, if I get 2000 corn on, where am I going? I can't go to beans. They're not tick for tick. You can't go to oil, soybean meal. So where do you go? Mm-hmm. If I get run, if I were quoting outright in the 2 year and I get caught on 2000, I sell 500 tenure. I'm hedged.
Right.
Or I have some kind of hedge on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not just purging. Yeah.
I'm not just purging. And that's always been the problem with me with corn and beans.
Yeah. You can't just like short ethanol.
Right. I don't know what else, you know, where else to go. And I think that will ultimately be a big issue with the corn when people start quoting more size. That's going to be a big issue. Over. I mean, plus
you would have to think that smart traders on the other side of that would know that there's nowhere to go. So they're probably more likely to see if they can catch somebody,
right?
You know, dick in hand, you know, essentially.
Right. Like, and to your point, it's boom, boom. It's like, hey, if you do it right at 1:15, they got 5 minutes to decide what they're going to do.
Right.
Yeah. What am I going to do? Yeah. Now they're holding for the day.
They got 5 minutes.
And they'll bid that thing up on,
right.
on
your you choice know, settlement. Is, yeah. Your choice is go to Deese, or I mean, go to March. Like if we were trading Deese and I was caught short. All right. So now I'm selling the spread. Well, you better know what the spread is, because I'm guaranteeing you, you're selling it at a price that's going to be horrendous, you know, or do you eat it? And I'm guessing anyone who moves that much corn is probably a high frequency firm that has zero issues putting on 2,000, 3,000 corn. They have the money to back them up. Whereas somebody like me, who's a local, I'm not going to have that money, you know,
to carry corn. You either got to puke it or do, I mean, I guess wear it and hope.
I asked ChatGPT, by the way, for some inverse corn markets. It suggested livestock and ethanol markets. So you weren't too far off, Larry.
Let's go. See?
Yeah.
See, and
trader mindset.
Again, I don't know. That's always been my problem with corn. And, you know, I've said it. If anybody really wants to learn the algo, you want to really learn the algo, I would tell you to bring up the bean spreads.
Beans. Okay. What's the ticker on that?
ZS on. So you'd probably want, I don't know what bean spreads really. I mean, I would assume Novi's front month beans. What are we in, September? Yeah. Novi's probably front month beans. Use Nove Jan. Mm-hmm. You're gonna go Nove Jan. I mean, by far the only real bean spread to trade is NX July Nove. Okay. By far the best one to trade, especially from March until probably the beginning of May. That's a phenomenal trade. A
seasonal spread, essentially.
It is. It is a seasonal spread. New crop, speculative. Old crop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, from my perspective, there's so many timers there, and the bid and offers aren't outrageous. So you don't really, you can quote without quoting. So what I mean is, like, if I want to quote, I don't have to throw like a 500 lot out there. I can throw 420 lots out there and I'm going to get a piece. So I'm quoting without quoting, because I don't view having 80 spreads on as a monumental risk to me.
Right.
Whereas, you know, if you're out there with 1,000 or 2,000, there's risk. Right. I don't care if you have a spread or not. I mean, I watched NX. I forgot the year it was. I remember NX one day. I bought it at like -5. I held this thing to even, and it might've been my worst trade ever, because 2 days later it was 75 cents to the positive. I forgot what happened. I know what date it was. It was on 4/20. It was on April 20th. I forget the year, but I do remember it was on 4/20.
I'll spark one up for you next time.
So I think I got a general understanding of, you know, there's the K algo, the A algo, whatever. There's this version of allocation that is systematic. I think the real question is, what's the game to play, right? Like, where's, like, and obviously I'm not saying, like, give me your edge. Like,
oh, no, I don't care. I mean,
what's a vanilla version of the trade? Because my mind's like you, so you mentioned, like, owning the market. Right away, I think, wow, okay, if I own the market, it turns the algo off for a split second. So I could maybe, like, right before a timer, boom, own the market, and then I can get the fills that I want first, then the algo kicks in, or I can overquote to get fills that I want, but maybe I'm playing a little bit of chicken on potentially getting overquoted or filled on more than I want. Like, where are some of the things, like, I guess as a scalper or as somebody who's trading essentially the spreads or spread markets, what kind of things would you actually use this information towards your benefit?
I mean, this is hard. This is where you kind of separate the recreational traders from like seasoned professionals. Mm-hmm. First of all, you can't play the game without a membership. I mean, to get that kind of size, you need money backing you. Like, again, I mean, in the 2 year.
Yeah, you can't just put on a 5,000 right. lot just because you want to. You actually have to. You have to have the money.
A normal person isn't going to be able to put in a 5,000 lot. Like, you go back, you know, my clearing firm has always been very generous with me because they knew I didn't carry shit overnight for the most part. I've gotten one or two calls in my day because I carried too much, and it's really never been my clearing firm that is upset with me. It's usually the CME. Like, hey, margins. You know, I remember having a spread on, he's like, hey, margin's 3.5. You're a tad short. You got till tomorrow to get the hell out of it. And, you know, that puts a ton of pressure on you working out of a trade that you know, at least they're not. Well, you can't work out of. Oh, no. They pretty much said by the pick close, you got to be out.
Well, I would say at least they didn't force close you as soon as the market opened.
No, they don't force close you, but there's it's not like they gave it to me for free. My clearing firm had to lend me the money, you know, so I had to pay overnight interest on that. And you go, oh, that's not that much. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
all good old boys club shit, though. Like, Johnny Retails can't do this. You know, you can overquote your 5 lot, but you can't overquote to 5,000 hoping to get a fill on 50 and play the game at that right. level.
And again, the problem is most people who are interested in this, the only ones they could legit play would probably be corn and beans mm-hmm. because, mm-hmm. again, the size isn't as big there. I mean, if you look at beans, I mean, you're not getting bids and offers more than 50 to 100, you know, 200, right. you know, it's not huge size. So you then can't quote a 5 lot.
From a retail perspective, let's just say I'm observing this activity, watching, you know, sort of MBO orders, I'm watching the time and sales come through, like, and I can sort of get an idea, like, I think you allude to this a lot, like, you can kind of see whether it's a timer or, like, it's, you know, actually people pulling and stacking or whatever, like, what kind of observations even does it benefit? Like, knowing someone who can actually afford to play the game, that they're actually in the game, right? Like, knowing that there's a whale at the table, knowing that, you know, somebody might potentially be overbidding, or I would think best case scenario, knowing somebody overbid and they got stuffed and they got served, right? And then, like, what did they have to do kind of thing? Like, again, like, just thinking from my perspective, if I'm watching this and I can't participate, but I can see the result of someone who did participate, what do I do?
I think you nailed it there.
Yeah.
The whole point here is why I try to have people watch the bean spread is because it's active both ways. And then you can see if somebody's stacking the book. You can also see if timers are going through. And you can watch, hey, there's a 20 lot going. He's going every 4 seconds in the bean spread. He's selling a 20 lot every 4 seconds. That's just going to give you order flow. Okay, he keeps going. And now if he's doing it at, let's say, 113 and he doesn't stop, I guarantee you he's going to 115. He's mm-hmm. not starting at 113 to stop at 113.30.
Right.
If he's doing it every 4 seconds or 5 seconds, whatever the order is, he's going to go to 115. So then you go, well, okay, there's 20 in here. He's selling a 20 lot, so he's selling 4. He's going to sell 800 spreads here. He's going to sell 800 spreads. So now what else is somebody else doing? Is somebody stacking the book to buy these things? Now you want to look what's right. somebody doing. Is somebody quoting the book or is somebody going, nobody wants to buy these things. Well, chances are we're going to go down.
Right.
They pull it. So it's more for the average retail guy. It's more about reading the book. Mm-hmm. It's kind of, people always ask me, how would you teach me to read the book? Teach me to read the book. The Bean Spreads, the best place to learn to read the book. Because you're getting action both ways. You're getting timers and it's not too big. Like, it's hard for me to explain to anybody. Well, read the book in the 2-year spread.
I've tried that. It's not easy.
Right. It's 200,000 up. Mm-hmm. And it's 200,000. Next, you know, it's 50,000 versus 400,000. And then it flips. And people are like, well, how do you read that? I can't.
The game's not so obvious to detect. Whereas,
And there's so much, size on it. Mm-hmm. You just, how do you teach somebody to read that?
There's too many people to hide in.
It got so hard for me at the end of the 2-year. Like, not when they were quarter ticks. When they were quarter ticks, the game was the game. But what happened with the 2-year at the end when they were quarter ticks is the outrights would be 200,000 up on the closes.
Sure.
And you're just like, hey, this is utter insanity. I mean, we trade... You know, at the time we were only trading probably 500,000 contracts. Now this is before we were trading that much. We were only trading 200,000, 250,000 on a day. And you're telling me on the close, we got 200 on the bid, 200 on the offer.
Right.
No, everyone was playing the game because they knew that's when orders were going to come in that last minute. What banks have to close out positions or everyone's closing out positions on settlements.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they play.
Yeah.
So essentially, as a retail trying to learn this sort of like algo, like how does order flow come in, like the book, it's more about understanding the game that is being played by professionals and trying to find out where your spot in that is, like to see what your setups would be. And it's interesting because like in poker, it's very much the same. Like if you're a novice and you don't understand the core fundamentals of how ranges work and why people play certain hands, you might look at what somebody's doing and go, what the, like, this guy's out of his mind. Like, why is this professional playing this hand from this position when this guy raised from that position? It doesn't make any sense. Well, once you start to look at the math of what he's doing and why he's doing it, you understand the fundamentals, the play starts to make more sense. And I think that's kind of similar to what we're seeing here with these algos is once you understand the game that's being played on the higher level, you can understand how you can start to interact with some of those on a meta level of like the sub games or where's my spot in this, right? Like, so I see player A is doing this, player B is doing that. I might have an opportunity in between there just based on that observation. I can't be player A, I can't be player B, but I can sort of profit from this in some way, shape, or form. Let's go, ES. Holy shit.
It's almost like betting on a boxing match, but while you're watching the match happen. If you can identify the big fighters and watch them land their blows, if you can see one guy losing, then there's a chance to jump on board.
If you don't understand why a body punch, this round is important to tire a guy down or whatever, like, it doesn't make any sense.
Right,
if you don't
right.
understand why somebody would be overbidding, if you don't understand the way that allocations happen, then it's all for naught kind of thing, I guess is my point. Like, so it's not necessarily understanding how a K algo works or an A algo works because you want to game the system. It might be for us, retail, the band of traders, it might be more you understand the game that's being played, therefore you can try to find your spot in it.
Yes.
Or ride behind the elephant game or whatever it is, or noticing, like we were saying, noticing when somebody just fucks the game up, right? Like,
right.
and that's probably the best opportunity, like just as watching like something like that, when you see somebody step in it and they start like puking it out like right away, or if you're watching multiple markets and you see them go to another market and put it like right on the bid, or
that's exactly it. Where's the edge in something like this? Well, you want to know the best edge is waiting for somebody in the 5-year to hit 500,000 spreads. you watch 500,000 spreads go on. The spread market's the least of your interest. What are they doing in the outrights? Because one of those outrights, one of those four legs is going to go out of whack. And that's where you got to sweep. That's your edge. Your edge is there. Look, this is me who has, again, more inventory. People would be shocked at how much I can put on in any market.
Yes.
With that said, here's somebody who has the ability to do it, and I refuse to do it now because I'm at such a disadvantage. This is even with me, with my knowledge of the K-algo. I'm still at a huge disadvantage because my size is like a pimple on an elephant's ass. Some of these firms, when they hit bids and offers, they're not doing it with my inventory. They're doing it with 49,999 lots. And they're not doing it one time. They're dropping Dragon seven clicks. So they're hitting 300,000, 350,000 on a clip. They're trying to knock people out.
Right.
And why do I want to compete with that? I mean, there's no good in this. Like, it's like, okay, let's say my inventory is 10,000. Okay. I put 10,000 on the bid. I'm going to get, just say I get 100. You're like, yes, made $700. Made $700. Made $700. What a day. $2,100. Oh, shit. You got 10,000. You lost three ticks on it. Lost right. 210,000.
Yeah.
It's out and outright math. Like the risk reward, it doesn't add up anymore. It just doesn't add up. It's like in that instance, because I guarantee you, if I get 10,000 on, I'm not losing a tick on it. I'm going to lose two ticks on it at a minimum. So my cost is 140. So how much can I make through? So is that three rolls, you know, on quoting like that I can make that much money? Probably. You know, it's kind of like I'm borrowing money. It's like, I get it now. They're giving it to me now. They're going to take it all back at some point. If you keep quoting, I mean, I don't recommend anyone quoting. And, you know, again, this is always, you know, it's easy for me to say, cause I still do it from time to time. I don't like to do it, but I do it, especially if I think there's some free money out there. Mm-hmm. I'll play the game. I don't like doing it big at all anymore. It just, again, it's a risk reward thing.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
But I think the allocation markets, not so much the A, but the K, are the best markets to learn order flow, to watch orders. Without a doubt, if you want to learn the ladder inside and out, you got to watch an algo market.
Which markets would that be? I know that UB and the treasuries. Oh, UB's not?
The only K algo in the treasuries is the 2-year. In outrights, we're talking outrights here, not spreads. Mm. So in the outrights, it's just the 2-year, that ZT. And then if you go to the grains, you've got your corn, beans, and wheat are all K-algo. I'm sure the soybean meal and oil are, but not positive because I've never traded those markets.
Yeah.
But I would assume they are also K-algo. And the K-algo that runs in the 2-year and the K-algo that runs in the grains are significantly different.
Just split wise or more than
no,
that?
No, even though they're both 40-60.
Huh.
Even though they're both 40-60, they're different layering based on the size, the market. Like it's way more difficult to get a fill. It's harder to manipulate the K-Algo and the grains than it was in the 2-year. It's a harder manipulation, I should say. I mean, it can still be done. It's just more difficult.
Gotcha.
Because they favor FIFO a little more in that market.
Oh, so they give more weight to the allocation portion.
It's just, and it's a rounding issue. Towards the end of the algo, there is a rounding issue on decimal points. And everyone would look, well, it's just a couple decimal. No, it's contracts that go to – it really affects
right.
how that algo is filled or how that algo trades.
But that's not something that like we can see just watching the book. We don't know who's getting filled what where or how that distribution is going out, right?
No, nobody knows. I mean, I can't even see, like, I don't know. Like, you could break it down.
What you know is based on your experience.
Yeah, you could break down orders in TT. You can see the individual fills if you really mm-hmm. want to. The problem is, you know, it's kind of like, hey, they sold 200,000. Do I really want to see what the top guys got tagged on?
Right.
I don't really care. Like, if they got tagged, they got tagged. I'm just happy I wasn't part of the tag. You know, where I got steamrolled.
As long as you have an idea of what you're going to get, that's all that really matters.
Yeah. I mean, for the people who want to learn this, I mean, this is, if you want to learn the algo, like look at the bean spread and then put the two outrights up with them. If you're looking at that July Novi spread, look at the outrights, see if there's a big hit one way and what happens in the outrights. Because there's always a leg that goes out of whack on a hit. No matter how you do it, there's always a tail to that order.
Okay.
So if somebody hits 200,000 2-year spreads, for instance, there's going to be a 5 or 7% tail in probably the front or, you know, in the front or back month. There's going to be a 7% tail to the order. So that means there's going to be another 14,000 outrights that just click through the book.
Huh.
That's your edge.
Right.
Figuring out what that tail is. And typically how the tails work are, you know what they're doing. If they're doing a big sell, and this is easy even on a 200,000 lot, this is actually just if they're selling 10,000 lots, there's a tail. So where's the money? The money isn't the 10,000 hitting the spreads. It's where the 700 lot's going to go off. I want to quote that price because they're going to hit that price at a good price, and I'm going to pick up my contracts there.
That makes sense. I got something. You mentioned at one point HFTs, and one of our buddies in the Discord used to work in the HFT, and he actually mentioned that there is some overlap between the two of you, so you probably might have actually traded against their fund. They traded mostly ZT and volatility. When there's volatility, they traded aggressively, required at least 2 ticks of movement to make money with their algorithms. He had a question about whether you look at like the relative differences in the quantities available on bid side versus like offer side on the book and make decisions off of anything like that.
Okay. So back in the day, you know, when I was doing the 2-year and let's say they were a little tighter of the range, I never paid attention to that. I had a feel for the market. And if I believed, I sat down one time with Left Hash. I did a podcast with him.
Yeah, that was one on YouTube, right?
Yeah, Guarding the Left Hash. There was one day I called out the 2 years was like 2,000 bid, and there was like 30,000 on the offer. And I'm watching, there's a buy timer going into the offer. And I sat there with JD and I said, the bid's going to hold. They're going to lift this offer. And I left the podcast. I remember leaving in the middle of it. I got to go do this. I know this is money.
Right.
I ran back to my place. I got on the bid and I bought him. And I mean, he was still on the podcast and it was like 25 minutes later, they lifted all 20, you know, it flipped. So a lot of it was based on gut, but I know exactly what he's asking. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you would find the side you know, there's a strong side to it, you know, that you would find. And yeah, you would take advantage of it. I mean, yeah, you'd always want to be joining the strong side. You know, like if there was more on it, I always figured, well, hey, I was a big boy. I was able to put on significant size. So I was never worried about getting shut out of anything. Mm-hmm. But different time, different place. I mean, when I was really big doing it, the 2 year really only had a 7 to 8 tick range during the day. You know, I had exposure, but it was limited exposure.
Right. It wasn't going to run like a handle on you.
Right. It's not like now in the 2 year where you're like, well, they're eighth of a ticks. They're moving. My God, you know, they're moving like 128, 140 ticks in a day. So mm-hmm. 20 full ticks. When I was messing around with size in the 2 year, I didn't have that kind of exposure. I never had that kind of exposure. It was a much tighter market. So yeah, I mean, to answer his question, yeah, I was always aware. The things I look at were orders on each side. I took into account how many orders were on each side, probably more than the size, because the orders were more alpha to me than the size there. I wanted to know how many orders were there.
If there's like 200 lots on the bid, but there's 20 participants or right. one participant, it's a big difference.
So I'm like, well, wait a second. There's more guys trying to sell here. Why are there more people trying to sell here? Why are there, you know, so it was always a game trying to figure out, okay, but then you have somebody like me who figured out the game, and I'm sure whoever's listening at the HFT, they figured out the same game I did. It's not like it's right. You know, once you figure it out, you can figure it out. Mm-hmm. I figured, well, wait, if they're going to do a 3,000 lot here and there's only 100,000 there, why do I want to put all, why do I want one order? I'm better off dropping and dragging 25 lots, and I'm going to have 525 lots there, because they're going to do a three. I'm going to get one on each of them. So I'm going to get 500 contracts versus if I just put the order there, why'd I only get 150 if I put my full clip there on one shot. So I always figured out the math, like where are my odds? What are they doing? Are they, what kind of size orders are they doing? If they're doing smaller orders, I know I have to go in there with bigger size to get a piece of it. If they're doing 1 to 2,000 lots and I know what the math is, going, well, wait a second. If I put in 50-50 lots here, I'm going to get 50 on, you know, a 2,500 lot. If I put a 2,500 lot in there on that same trade, I would only get maybe 20. Mm-hmm. So same risk, identical risk, because you're putting 2,500 out there. But I'm going to pick up 30 extra contracts because I broke it up. Now, an HFT is going to be able to program that a lot quicker than I do. You know, I can get about, you know, in my heyday, I could get 13, 14 clicks off in a second.
That's pretty good. That's StarCraft level.
But with that said, it's like I still have to adjust my order. You know, I don't have a 55 lot loaded. So I got to go to TT, make it 55. Right. And now I'm clicking and clicking and clicking in. Well, an HFT can do a program and boom, they put 100, they put 300 in there. Who cares? Well, they're going to pick up 300 contracts. Whereas I might miss a click by a second. And I only got in, say, 33 clicks because I was off on the time. You know, they move the time just that, you know, a fraction of a second. Or a second that cost me 7 to 10 to 14 contracts if they adjusted it a little bit and I wasn't on top of it.
I think that it should answer his question. He asked me not to give you the information of what he was doing until I teased that out of you. So basically, I think what they were doing was just looking at bid quantity bid minus quantity ask and then multiplying that by a weight factor. And then whatever the imbalance or tip, they
there was never a right or wrong way of
simple.
Doing it.
Yeah.
Right. And come on, my way was very simple too. Mm-hmm. I would just look at the bid and offer. I mean, it was just simple math. If, you know, if there's 10,000 on the bid and there's 1,000 orders there, I'm going to say the average order is 10, mm-hmm. even though I know that's not the exact math. You're going to have 20 lots. You're going to have, but
it's close enough.
The average order is 10. So if the average order is 10, I want to go, you know, 1.5 times the average order to be safe. And I'm going to click in 115 lots and they hit it. Oh, I got 100. Well, why? Well, because I had 115 lots and the average order is 10. I'm going to be bigger than them. And my 115 lots, I don't have risk on that. I mean, yeah, there's always risk, but you know what I mean? It's
It's manageable.
You know, it's, I always said in the 2 year, it's like, if I got, there was one time I had 10,000 spreads on that I actually wanted. I got the edge. I got it through the pit and through the screen. I had 10,000 on and I wanted them. But for the most part, it's very difficult to move out of 10,000 contracts.
I bet.
Extremely difficult. Even, you know, back in the 2 year. But if I got hit on 500 or 1,000 or 2,000, even if it was smashed against me, no panic at all. Because I'm like, well, I got 2,000 on. I can move out of 2,000 contracts.
Sure.
It might not be, I might still lose on 1,000 of them. I might lose on 500 of them. But I'll be able to leg out of them. It's much easier to leg out of 1,000 to 2,000 contracts versus trying to leg out of 10,000. I mean,
I'll take your word for that.
Yeah, right.
Hopefully someday we'll find out.
You can't, you just can't do it. I mean, even in the 2 year when the size was there, it was hard to move out of, you know, 3,000. I mean, there were multiple times that the spread was like 300,000 up. Well, you had to quote the spread because if I had 5,000 spreads on, I'd probably only be able to leg out of about 2,000 of them. And then you're like, well, shit, this isn't really going to go my way. I need to leg out of these things because I know I'm going to have to scratch these things. So I'm trying to leg out as many as I can to turn them because every thousand's worth $15,000 at that, you know, when right, I was right. doing that. So, you know, you turn 2,000 spreads at any one time, you're up $31,000 on the day. It's a nice day.
It sounds like something that could be pretty lucrative too, if you can spot somebody puking a position like that, like you mentioned.
There were, I mean, that's where the real money was at the twos at the end was finding the tails.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just got so big and firms have so much more money than an individual. Like if they, for instance, if the HFT from the guy who asked the question, I mean, if they knew I got tagged on 5,000, they're like, he's a local. He's not going to have more than a million backing him. We've got him 5,000 times here. We've got him on the hook for 75,000 per tick.
Right.
We're going to put pressure on him because we know just 3 ticks of pressure and it's going to go in my head. I'm down 25% of my nest egg here.
Right.
I mean, and they just, they'll lean on you and it doesn't, you know, they write those programs. They know every click that goes in an HFT. And they don't bother. I mean, I'm sure they know what I do in the outrights because I trade a unique size. So I'm sure they track me to a degree. Not to a degree that I'm going to affect the market, but they're aware of what I'm doing. They always are going to be aware because there's an edge in that. There's an edge for them to know those facts.
Right.
Because you're going to find somebody, you know, that has 50 or 100 on and or he's like, hey, this guy's flipping 64 lots 4 times a day. This is, dude, this is what he's doing. We're going to take advantage of him and, you know, try to, you know, squeeze him a little bit.
Right, right. Flair, you got any other questions, man? I think we kind of covered a lot of stuff here. Anything related to scalping that you want to ask or maybe TT?
No, I think, you know, the insight to just like kind of understanding how someone like myself can actually benefit from this information, which I think was like the big like look behind the curtain yes. for me is initially you're like, oh, this guy knows about the K algo and like, oh, that like just knowing that is something. But it's really just knowing that this mechanism is working and that there's other people who can do some things based upon their positions in the market and their ability to, you know, to quote that I should be watching out for so that I can sort of interact with it. And I think that was kind of the big aha for me. And just understanding that these dynamics are at play because, you know, it's like, it's almost like level 2 to level 2, right? So whatever you want to call it, it's level 3. Like, yeah, okay, there's bids and asks and there's pulling and stacking and there's, you know, the time and sales and there's order flow and delta and all that stuff. But understanding how some of these things get created and some of the games, like, I think like maybe the last question I would have for you is how often does this K-algo, A-algo sort of like overquoting or like 50 lots go wrong? Like how, or, and I guess maybe a follow-up to that would be when it goes wrong, how often is it deceptive and how often is it just someone had to do business and you just got in the way of it?
What do you mean by go wrong? Like it doesn't act as intended or?
Yeah. Let's say you get filled on all 2,500.
Yeah. You know, I mean, God, I haven't played this game in like, it's been a while since I played this game to know. Like when I trade the spreads now, I have the spread up so I know what prices are trading. But to be honest, like people are going to laugh at this. I don't know what the bid and offer is, like the size of the bid and offers anymore. I squeeze that down. You can tell by the center line what's trading. So I want to figure out, because all I care about is lagging a spread. I know exactly what you're asking for. I mean, I don't think there is a day that goes by in the roll that there's not at least one to two wipeouts. When you consider you're going to go UB, ZB, TN, ZN, ZF, and ZT, you got six markets. When it's going good, you know, like, so a roll pretty much, typically a roll now is 2.5 days. I mean, it varies. Mm-hmm. A roll is probably only 2.5. Sometimes it's 1.5 days. It varies. Like the May roll was phenomenal. The May roll lasted 5 days. It was honest to God, one of my best rolls ever. It was phenomenal. And then I followed it up with the August roll, or, you know, SEP, you know, I always call the roll the month I'm actually trading it. So, you know, the May roll is really June, but because I'm trading it in May, I'll call it the May.
Is that roll. When you find most of the timers going off when they're doing the rolls?
That's when all the timers. I mean, that's when the timers really go off, or during rolls in the treasuries.
Pay a little more attention to that. Probably had a better time of spotting them. Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. You know, that's the hardest thing. Like, if people would really spend the time not worrying about the K algo and the quoting, and just look in the outrights, because, like I said, you have four legs to a spread. So if we're just looking at a spread market, so what's the next spread we got? We got Dece March coming up in November. So we're going to roll Dece to March. Okay. So there, you can get long or short in Dece. You can get long or short in March. There's four sides here. One side's the weak side. One side's your edge. Find out what they're doing in the spreads. Watch for that timer, and you're going to find an edge on one of the four. Take advantage of it. So that's when I'm looking at the spread. Here's the spread market in the bonds. It's -2 at -1.75. The May roll was the perfect example. This past May roll, I remember they were letting me leg the spread at like -4, and it was at -6. I was legging the spread like two ticks in my favor because there was a buy timer going in the back month. And I was hitting the back. Nobody was selling it. The market is just selling off. And I'm like, screw you. I'm going to offer it. I know they're going to hit me. I didn't do it big. Mm-hmm. 25, 50 at a crack. But do a 50 lot, two ticks. I was up 100 ticks. And then I even worked it in the market, and then I tried to leg it. And there were times I was able to leg it for three ticks. So I turned a 50 lot into 150, which I can't do normally. I mean, I'm a scalper, but when I had the edge, when I had such significant edge in the spread markets, I'm able to squeeze an extra tick out of it, an extra half tick, whatever it is. You know, that was this past May roll was such an anomaly. It wasn't even funny. I can't even remember last time the market traded that good on a day. I mean, six-figure rolls used to be the norm. I mean, there were traders that just came in for rolls. All they did was trade 2 weeks. And I was a small player compared to the guys who went into the pit. Those guys were slinging some serious size. They would come in 250 to 400,000 for the roll. That's what they would make.
Good Lord.
Hey, they might lose it, but I mean, that's what they did. And they did it four times a year. That's all they wanted to trade.
Jeff, one last question about the algos, and I'll let you get to bed.
Shoot.
How often do they change? because I imagine there's probably going to be some learning curves that maybe it might be beneficial to have that. Just be aware.
They don't change the rules of them. The only thing that was brought up to me is there's going to be a change in the ag markets, which, you know, I don't know if it's public or not, so I'm not going to get into the exact specifics, but somebody's proposing some changes in the ags. And that's why some people reached out to me to give my opinion on what would happen. Mm-hmm. Like, why would they be making these said changes? And I just gave my opinion on what it was.
Always enjoy talking with you. It sounds like we got some homework here. So I know that I will be watching bean spreads, paying a lot more attention to that to try to see if maybe I get a better understanding, try to spot some of these tails and finally see some timers. I mean, I've seen some one lots fire in UB and that's it, but I've been watching the wrong market this whole time, it seems like.
No, let's see the timers. I mean, the best time, I mean, in the treasury, ZT is going to have a lot of timers. Because that's a 2-year, because that's the K algo. You're going to get timers there. The bonds have significant timers. ZB, I know I know most people can't trade ZB anymore.
I think there's just too much volume in some of those. I think watching the beans might be better because there'd just be less participants.
There's timers in corn. Corn's not a bad one to watch. I mean, again, I think watching is one thing, trading is another, because an average retail trader, what are you at, 454 on corn? I think that's what it is around turn. It's over $4.
Yeah, it's like $5.
I mean, you're at 1250 a tick. Let's just call it $4 to make math easier. A 1650 loser, $8.50 winner. That's terrible risk reward. Even I complain when I trade the ags because I'm at 88 cents around turn, and that's me complaining.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap things up here then. I'll just say thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Flary, for the questions here, helping direct this thing. If you guys want to see more from Jeff, I'll link the playlist that I put together for all your stuff, and then I got to find that guarding the left hash. I'll find the link for that and put it in.
Yeah, you know what? There's one. I sat down with JD a few times. Yeah. But there was one day I was spot on a timer, and we caught it live.
that's awesome.
Okay. By the way, I also sat down with him on my worst day ever in the 2-year, the day I lost. One time I've lost more than $10,000 in the 2-year. I sat down with him that day.
Was that what you were telling us about one of the first times we talked to you?
Yeah. Time I fat fingered.
Yeah, I
don't care sharing this now. I fat fingered 6,500 2-year when they were $15 a tick. So, I mean, I was down like 95K. That was one of my best trading days ever, by the way, after I fat fingered that.
Reclaimed that.
Getting it down to 30K. Yeah. Oh, I mean, I absolutely destroyed it. I wish I could trade every day like that.
Isn't that the best?
Minus 90,000. Yeah.
That's such a gambler, like poker player thing. Like winning 100K, no big deal. Going from minus 100K to break even, like let's go out
right,
for dinner.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it was. I mean, the fact that I took 60K off the fat finger, was like, oh my God. Like I just thought I was God for the day. I'm like, one of my best trading days ever.
Yeah. Well, if you guys liked what we did here, like, share, subscribe, all that good stuff. If you got questions, post them, send them to us, DM, Twitter, any of those places. There'll be links in the episode description to find that. Put it together enough, we'll get another one of these put together. But till then.
And get on the bid in ES because I need to fill at 5,800. Let's go.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Later.
Okay. What are you doing over there?
How do you guys trade ES at night? Like...
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations.
Produced by China Shop Productions.